All right, so a lot of you, this is a chance for us to, for me to reintroduce my organization. Many of you knew us as the American Legacy Foundation, but today we're the Truth Initiative. We decided that we wanted a brand that really reflected our primary work, got people who aren't in our field to understand where we were going more quickly. Also, in other big news, we recently moved. Just this last Monday, we moved our offices to 900 G Street in Washington, D.C., so I hope some of you will have a chance to visit. Along with the name change, we've gone into an investigation of our mission and vision, and we really wanted to emphasize this organization's renewed focus on youth and youth health. And with that, I want to talk a little bit about the environment we're working with. I want to start with a little bit of really good news. Cigarette use among youth has declined from 23% in 2000 to 8%. That's a 65% decline in 14 years. And I think many of the people, yes, great news. And I'm proud to say that these numbers, there's a lot of things working on these numbers, but I know the work of the people in this room is a substantial factor. Another piece of good news hidden in this data is that regular use, everyday use of cigarettes by youths has gone down even further proportionally. That said, we still have a lot of work to do. There are new products on the market and products that as of today are still unregulated by the FDA. Not surprisingly, we're showing, and they will be sooner or later, but we're showing surprising uptake in those product categories. One thing that isn't on here is hookah, because it's a different data set, but the latest NYTS data set shows that hookah use is up to 9% in the past 30 days among youth. Troubling developments. So if you look at the reduction of cigarette use over time, which is a very good story, but you contrast it with the use of any tobacco product, including, for these purposes, e-cigarettes, you'll see that the overall gains in last 30-day use have really been offset by use in alternative products, and that the use of tobacco in its entirety is pretty much flat. So that's the state of youth tobacco use, but another thing we're reacting to is the state of the marketplace. First of all, we have tobacco products. We have a very different kind of tobacco product today. The tobacco industry has continued to introduce and market new products. We have continued concerns about the availability of menthol, which we know is a primary starter for youth. Applause to the FDA, by the way, for the recent decision around Camel Crush. Fruit and candy-flavored little cigars, hookah, and e-cigarettes are key drivers in youth interest and experimentation. And that's just been confirmed by two recent studies. NYTS data released in October indicate that one-half to two-thirds of kids who are using a tobacco product are using flavored tobacco products. And recently an analysis of the PATH data that found 80% of youth ages 12 to 17 used a tobacco product in the last 30 days, used a flavored tobacco product. This is a big issue, and it's a place where regulation has a gap. Although flavored cigarettes, candy-flavored cigarettes are off the market, as you can tell from this, candy and fruit-flavored products of all other varieties are still on the market. And of course, for us, we still remain deeply troubled that menthol cigarettes continue to be a starter product for youth. As I mentioned before, there's also new products, and there's a lot of misunderstanding about what these products do and what their health effects might be. Just pick hookah as an example. In our formative research, which is very similar to the processes described by both of you, so I won't go through it, we found that many youth hookah users think it's much less harmful. They think, oh, it's candy flavored, it's fine, there's water, and it's a water pipe. What they don't know is that a hookah session exposes you to the same carbon monoxide as five packs of cigarettes. It's not good for you, and we need to let kids know. We also have some troubling changes, and Kathy in particular touched on this, our youth patterns around social smoking. Many kids today can't use cigarettes the way we were thinking about them when we started the Truth Campaign in the 2000s. Great advances in clean indoor air laws have simply made it impossible for many kids to be smokers on every day. But kids are still smoking at parties and smoking with their friends, and many of them don't view this as smoking at all. We find that when we dig deeper into our quantitative research, and if we ask the right questions, we find that kids that are identifying themselves as non-smokers actually are last 30-day users, and many of them more frequent than they would like to think they're using it. So we also have a generational shift at play at the same time. We've gone from Generation X, which is a generation I'm ostensibly in, where everything was about rebellion and fighting the man, to Generation Z, which is our current crop of kids who are just now starting college. Gen Z is even different than their predecessor, the millennial generation. They are growing up in tougher economic times, but they're very practical and somewhat less exuberant than their millennial predecessors. However, they also show a new trend in being extremely accepting of diverse behavior. You'll hear the phrase "you do you" from them, which is a real challenge for us, because they say, you know, it's not my behavior, I don't want to judge someone else. I saw in the book, there's going to be an entire session on this attitude and the challenges it poses to this kind of communication. And here we have them, the selfie generation. I don't take selfies, I breaks the phone. We also have a very different media environment. Kids just simply consume media differently, and you'll see this here. Kids are spending tons of time online. They're getting a lot of their video entertainment directly from their computers and their handheld devices. They're social. They want to be able to comment on what they see. Thumbs up, thumbs down. And again, a typical teen sends and receives 30 texts per day. It's pretty amazing. So against all of this information, against changing behaviors, against a changing youth demographic, and luckily for us, against this wonderful investment in the market that the federal government is making, really bringing home hard-hitting messages on health effects and on really gauging a message to at-risk kids, we were able to take a little bit a different approach with Truth 2.0. A lot of you are no doubt familiar with our original Truth campaign. At the time it launched, we were able to use brand new information about tobacco industry manipulative practices, things kids really didn't know at the time, kids who frankly were more naive than kids are today about how industry of all types tried to manipulate their behavior. But today, these facts are somewhat less shocking and are viewed with some degree of ennui among our target audience. So we wanted to do something a little bit radical, and we had the freedom to do this because of the environment we're working in. Rather than just talking to the 8% of kids who still smoke, we wanted to use Truth 2.0 as a movement to talk to all kids, including the 92% who don't smoke, who can join us in creating a smoke-free generation, to join us to be the generation that ends smoking and finish it. I also have a wonderful reel of how we got to this conclusion and how we did some of this work. I hope you will enjoy it.
Since the beginning in 2000, Truth has had incredible success in preventing teen smoking. In 2014, we saw the teen smoking rate hit an all-time low of 9%. But with a new generation of teens, the Truth brand had become less relevant and our momentum had started to stall. We needed to find new, memorable ways to speak to an audience that didn't relate to the usual smoking scare tactics and inspire this new generation to pick the fight back up again and make it their own. While Truth will always be a brand that arms teens with the facts, it empowers them to make their own decisions, we decided to flip the script on how we deliver those facts. So instead of talking to the 9% of teens who smoke, we introduced a new mission, calling on the 91% who don't smoke to use their passion and social influence to bring that 9% into the fold. And together, feed the generation that ends smoking.
This, of course, worked when we used it in the green room. But.
We gave them a way to use their social influence to become the face of this revolution. Continuing our takeover of the VMAs, we dropped a culture bomb by showing images of today's biggest celebrities smoking cigarettes, letting them know they were unknowingly giving big tobacco free marketing. The cultural conversation was once again about teen smoking and the power of truth.
A lot of buzz, but a lot of times MTV Video Music Awards, anti-smoking ads.
It's good.
It showed photos of celebrities smoking, calling them unpaid tobacco spokespeople.
Genius, shock and awe.
All of these images of star, cigarette. All of a sudden you see that and you think, oh my God, it has to have an impact cumulatively over time. And the Truth Campaign is trying to undo it. I think it's a great, great idea.
Then, on Music's Biggest Night, the Grammys, we literally became part of the music by teaming up with the internet's most popular musicians and stars to drop a song and music video. The hook: smoking isn't just bad for your health, it's a killer for your love life. We took over pop culture.
Through bodybuilding. Why not? Right? Sweat.
She's the keeper.
Wearing a cat suit, right? Swipe.
Yeah.
Ooh. Cigarette in hand. Let's play.
You're trying to cast a wide net when you're dating, right? So why would you minimize that by smoking in your pictures?
We are making amazing progress. So we wanted to show teens that their participation was making a difference and then celebrate their efforts.
The beat go hard though.
To build on our momentum, we broaden the focus to take on different flavors and types of combustible. And most recently, we tapped into the social speak of the internet to combat social smoking and keep the heat on big tobacco.
Can I make a mistake?
You're a smoker?
I never even bought my own pack.
It's a trap.
It tastes like tropical kumquat. So can't do that for me.
It's a trap.
It's gone.
The result of all this work, we built up 2.2 million followers on our social media channels, 132 million total online video views, over 78 million in our media value, a 272% website traffic increase. Campaign awareness is at an all-time high of 75%, and the teen smoking rate is now declining faster than ever, down to 8% since 2011. Not only is truth once again a major part of youth culture, we're changing behavior, and every day we're getting one step closer to finishing it.
All right, that worked well after a little hiccup. So hopefully you saw some of the themes that I was talking about as we went into this. And just as a matter of message development, we do exactly the same process that our colleagues do. We do a lot of pre-testing. We actually show ads beforehand, looking for red flags, looking for receptivity, which is very important to us. And also to see if we think they're persuasive to make a case to not smoke and to encourage their friends to not smoke. I did mention that the emphasis on big tobacco is not as large as it used to be, but just to show you our latest campaign, I want you to see that we're not giving them a break.
Cigarillo smokers be like, it's strawberry paper, bro. Strawberry never hurt. Come on, 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 come on. Party smokers be like, I be smoking parties, yup.
Is it a library?
I know. Big tobacco be like, come on, 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 come on.
And almost everybody in this room is going to be completely amazed, but many of the people you saw in those videos are extremely well known by our target audience. They apparently are on things like YouTube and Vine. Have you guys ever looked at that stuff? I'm just teasing with you. But they are. They're extremely popular. And one thing we see when we put these ads up on YouTube is, oh my God, I can't believe they got X, Y, or Z to do this. Isn't this cool? And the people that they have in their social channels come to be cheerleaders, and also people who spread it via their viral networks. So not only do we get the value of the money we place in the ad, we get the value of that viral spread. We talked a little bit about engagement in that video, but it's just been amazing. There were 49 million views for that left swipe video. The It's a Trap video, when it went on Twitter, we had an average engagement rate of 26% with 8 million impressions and 2.1 million engagements. That means 2.1 million tweets. The people at Twitter were so blown away. They're using us as a case study. They've never seen anything like it. This is our awareness for the entire year. The entire year awareness to present is about 68%. We test this doing a confirmed awareness measure. Right now, it's higher than it's ever been. It's at 75% for the latest wave, as we said in the video. And that's in part because we've decided to make an additional infusion of money into our media buy this year. So you're going to see a little bit more of the truth in 2015 and 2016. We also, of course, are doing a longitudinal study to look at not only the impact of truth on knowledge, attitudes, and beliefs, but the impact of truth on behavior. I've been told by our evaluation science and research group that if I get into the preliminary happy news that we've heard from that, they will kill me because they want to publish on it and don't want me to ruin it, so I won't. But if you guys want to hear more about this, I would just give a little teaser. We're going to be at SRNT, and we're going to be talking about it. So that's it. If you have any questions, this is my contact information. Feel free to email me. I answer my own emails. Thanks a lot.
So many thanks to our panelists. Open the floor now for questions. We have about 20 minutes for Q&A. So start over here to my right.
We did, a few of them. But she asked whether we heard from celebrities that we called out for giving unpaid time. We did hear from some of them. The reaction ranged from really, really, really angry to chagrin. So we did have a little bit of that. I don't want to get into the details of all of it because some of it wasn't all that pleasant. But in the end, I think we made our point.
Another question?
They're really compelling. I saw some research on the brain that shows that if you expose someone who's in recovery to the images that you can stimulate craving again, mm-hmm. and that that also sometimes it's hard with kids to figure out what they will feel is cool versus what we're saying is uncool. So I just wanted to know if anyone had any comments or thoughts.
Sure. I mean, I can take that first. So, you know, we're really careful to the degree possible that we don't create any triggers for smokers who are actively trying to quit or, you know, potentially induce a relapse. And so, at least for our advertising, how we simulate that they're smoking is always from behind, and you see basically smoke going away, but you never actually see the cigarette, and you never actually see the behavioral and, you know, basically moving of the cigarette towards the mouth. And so there has to be a way for us to connect, because a lot of our advertising is metaphorical, so we have to connect the metaphor back to the behavior. But that's the way that we've been able to figure out how to do it. And we haven't seen any unintended consequences from the research, so hopefully we're on the right track there. But that was at least the first part of your question. Did I get the second part of your question?
That was just that if some of the images are supposed to look uncool or disgusting or whatever, some kids might say that's cool anyway.
Yeah. I mean, we definitely haven't gotten that. We've been looking specifically for, are we in any way making the behavior look cool? And if anything, in the verbatims, what we hear from the kids is sadness. They get the sense of social isolation because we always show the youth who's being controlled by cigarette smoking basically separate and apart and alone. And that has gone a long way in helping kids to understand the consequences of social isolation as well. So we haven't seen that.
It's certainly research we're aware of and we keep an eye on, and we're a little more aggressive by, I think, than you guys even in sometimes showing the behavior. But we usually show it in a context of calling out something, and what we, and if we are gonna call it out, we wanna have an image that makes it clear what we're talking about. But because we're aware of the exact research you're talking about, we do a lot of pre-testing, and I will tell you behind the scenes, we adjust the ad based on what we hear. Our post-market testing has not shown us any concerns along those lines, but it is something we look at. Our ads are deliberately designed to provoke conversation. The vast majority of the response we get is positive, but we do, because we're very social and we're on online forums where kids participate, we are happy to engage the haters as well. So that's part of the game when you're trying to engage in digital-based youth culture in 2015.
Yes, please.
Dave, where are you getting the funding for Truth?
The Truth Initiative is funded through the Master Settlement Agreement that occurred in the late 90s. The states were good enough to set aside a large chunk of the money they got back to help pay for Medicaid costs. The state set aside some money to start a national foundation, and that's us.
Yes, please.
Being from the state that not so Catholic has the highest pledging rights among the demographic level, is there a way that you can control when you're placing a national high heavy up in states that have the significant higher pledging population?
So are you asking me that question?
I can answer.
So right now, the Truth Campaign, I won't speak on your behalf, the Real Cause Campaign is running at a national level, so every market is receiving the same levels of intensity. And so for what I can say is that no market is under-delivering. Like, all the markets are over-delivering. If we know that we're reaching 90% of youth at least 20 times per quarter. So the reason why we did it that way is, one, cost effectiveness, but also we wanted to ensure the same, yes, we're the federal government, we wanted to ensure the same level of dosage for all, and not like potentially withhold some level of dosage for some markets and over index other markets. And so what I can say is that your market is getting hit as hard as every other market. But I don't know that that's the answer you're looking for. Yeah.
I would say for tips, so we have I would call it a floor that everybody gets 800 GRPs per quarter, generally speaking. So in the same way, and we do that through the national plan, and we do that because of the efficiencies that Kathy talked about. but we do identify some designated market areas. Last year, I think we did the top 24, I think, designated market areas with the highest smoking prevalence, and then they get, you know, kind of on top of what we would consider kind of a floor for effectiveness, they would get extra, and that's generally in the form of radio, out of home, cinema, that kind of thing. So we do try to address those population groups where there is a smoking prevalence.
And we will have, just to add to that, some additional campaigns that are coming out that are more spot market based. So, for instance, I mentioned that the Fresh and Park campaign just launched last October, and that's trying to reach primarily multicultural youth who identify with hip hop culture. And so we're very focused in on the geographic areas where we have the highest propensity of multicultural youth, the highest prevalence of them using tobacco products, and then there's a high propensity for hip hop. The hip-hop lifestyle. So the real cost is meant to be our national level set, and then some of our new campaigns coming out will be specific to high intensity markets.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you for this presentation, and I applaud the Truth campaign for focusing on the tobacco industry as the vector. And I'm wondering, in your research to the CDC and especially the FDA, since you have part of your ad addressing the fact that kids don't want to be controlled, and you're saying controlled by the smoke, how about, did you do any research for efficacy about how kids feel about being controlled by an industry that's part of the 1%? And pulling the strings. I'd like to see more attention given to the source of the problem. It's almost as if cigarettes are falling from the sky. I don't see it. So thank you to Truth for doing that. Maybe I can do that a little more easily because they're not directly government funded. But what can you say to that?
So I can give you my answer. I don't know if it'll make you happy. So I don't know that you know that we're 100% industry user fee based. We are 100% industry user fee based. So all of the advertising that we're utilizing is coming directly from the industry. And I mention that to say that we're not taxpayer dollars. So, but also FDA, in its where we stand, we regulate right now, it's a product that's legal for adults. So we have to be very careful. We want to make sure that our campaigns continue to see the light of day. As you know, the industry is very litigious. So what we're focusing in on is the actual product and showing the dangers of the product without extrapolating forward the industry angle. So that's just the one that we've chosen to take. We have also found through our research, and Dave alluded to this, is that a lot of youth do not want to place the blame externally. I think the marketplace has changed dynamically from when I was working on the Truth campaign in the early 2000s, where it was the kids were very open to seeing the industry as the enemy. We have found through our research that this generation of youth really does not want to have people external placing blame. So we found that, at least through our research. So I know it's probably not an answer that makes you happy, but what we can say is that kids are absolutely understanding the dangers of the product without us having to say the product is basically manipulated by the industry to make it more addictive, more toxic, or whatever. So, like I said, I don't know that you'd be happy with the answer, but that's the answer I can give you. Dave, I don't know if you know.
We'll keep beating them up.
Yeah.
I think you know, it's right that it isn't the same kind of persuasive. You know, I grew up listening to Johnny Rotten, you know, told me to destroy the passersby, and I don't think the kids today feel the same way. I think that exactly what you say is they're very cynical about industry, but that also means that they don't really judge them as good or evil. They just judge them as predictable capitalist actors, and so that argument isn't quite as persuasive. But I do think we do get some traction still with making sure kids know where it comes from, who's getting paid, where the money is going. So we are gonna keep hitting on that.
Questions? Yes.
I just have a question looking at the apparel industry. So have you found that there's any kind of pushback or ignorance of tobacco in places where more legal drugs are being used, especially
I can tell you in our social feeds, one consistent message from kids is, why would I choke tobacco when I could smoke marijuana? I don't think that's a very good, you know, I don't think that's a great conclusion for public health, and I think it's something we need to keep an eye on. I don't know that I see that we've seen anywhere the availability of legal marijuana market makes kids less aware of the health effects of tobacco. I do think they believe that marijuana is much, much less harmful.
Yeah, we hear the same thing. If we get questions, it's mostly about kids sometimes even confuse what we mean when we say smoking, because when we say smoking, they think marijuana. So we've had to somewhat change the way that we even reference tobacco smoking in light of the whole issue with marijuana. It comes up in every focus group we are in. It's very prevalent, and you know, they challenge us and ask us to do a risk assessment. Is marijuana less risky than tobacco? And so they're already in their mind assuming that marijuana is less risky than smoking tobacco.
Any other questions? Yes, in the back there.
When doing these assessments, do you assess how focusing on cigarettes may impact and benefit perceptions of like other products like vodka and cigars and shoes? That's a big
So I can approach that, and then I don't know if you guys have any. So we are asked the question all the time about the level of risk associated with different products. And so kids are very, very astute, and they do their own risk assessment and say, well, smokeless simply can't be as bad as smoking. And so I mentioned that we were doing a prevention campaign targeting young men in rural areas specific to the dangers of smokeless. And almost every market we go in, we hear inherently, why has nobody ever told us before that smokeless is so dangerous? But clearly it's not as bad as cigarettes. And so they do their own assessment. You know, FDA, as you guys know, does not yet have authority over the newer and novel products, even though cigars and cigarillos are not new and novel. But we don't yet have authority over any of those products like e-cigarettes, hookah, cigars. So we have not been able to tackle that in any of our advertising messaging, but we certainly hear it in every market we're in every U.S. city, how kids understand the dangers of combustibles over some of the other types of products like e-cigarettes.
Well, I don't think this needs to be. Are you going to address you?
We are not at this time.
I think the challenge for us, we are going to talk about e-cigarettes, but the challenge is for us, our name is the Truth Campaign, so we need to tell kids, we need to give kids a true message, an environment where there's a great deal of uncertainty that is both true, persuasive, and as mentioned before, doesn't have unintended consequences. So we're doing a lot of qualitative and quantitative research as we speak, and making sure that, because it's so much more delicate, that we don't accidentally do more harm than good. You know, it's much easier to go to market with a combustible message because it is incredibly, incredibly dangerous. That's super well understood. It's easy to tell the truth about it, and kids seem to be getting it.
We did have an ad that print and radio ad that ran in 2015 featuring a woman named Christy who used an e-cigarette but kept smoking. And the focus of that ad, while it mentions her e-cigarette use that she engaged in as a way to kind of reduce her overall smoking, you know, she never stopped smoking cigarettes completely. And that's kind of where we're really focused right now is on the 480,000 people that die every year due to, you know, smoking. So, we want to stay focused on that and try to make a dent in that number.
Mm-hmm. But I will say, even though we're not in active development on any e-cigarette messaging, FDA is funding over 50 studies on e-cigarettes. So, you know, we're collecting and amassing, you know, probably what will be the majority of the research in the marketplace to help us understand what can be said. But, I mean, we hear it all the time in our social media channels. We get questions all the time about the relative risks of e-cigarettes vis-a-vis combustibles. And as Dave said, we're very, very careful in what we say because we have to be sure that the message is accurate. And right now, the only message that we feel like we can even talk about potentially in the future when it comes to e-cigarettes is nicotine addiction. We don't know enough about the long-term health consequences. You know, we just don't know enough about what we can say. So, you know, the only thing we could potentially hang a hat on would be nicotine addictiveness.
A few more moments. Any other questions? Last question? Yes, sir.
First, congratulations to all of you. I feel you've got a great handle on this and are doing a great job, every one of your organizations, and it is a unique time. David, you mentioned reaching out to the smoke-free campuses, or that was part of the spiel. And we have a smoke-free campus, and the administration has chosen not to enforce it, and it's been pretty compliant, except for a group. The Asian students just, for whatever reason, don't want to comply. And so I'm going to meet with the Dean of Students next week, and I'm planning on going and just doing educational sessions. But I'm wondering if any of your media target within smoke-free campuses any subgroups.
We don't use media. We use media to congratulate campuses that have gone smoke-free, because what we're trying to do is emphasize positive change. So when you have a campus like Syracuse go smoke-free, it normalizes the notion of a smoke-free campus. So maybe the University of Missouri will go smoke-free. Maybe, you know, another one will go smoke-free. We do programs around campus smoke-free policies. We particularly are focused right now on historically Black colleges and universities and community colleges. And as part of our TA effort, we always emphasize that enforcement is a critical element of a tobacco-free campus policy. And our goal, by the way, is always tobacco-free. Smoke-free is better than nothing. But either of those without enforcement is, of course, very, very dangerous.
Yeah, I fought that battle and lost. Yeah. I appreciate your feedback.
One sort of follow-up on that, Gary. I'm Cynthia with Americans for Non-Smokers Rights. We have a number of partners, national partners, and others who are working on the Tobacco-Free College Campus Initiative. And we can help sometimes putting your school administrators together with other school administrators, because Ohio State University formerly had a good policy. They thought that they had a couple of exemptions, so we kind of negotiated with them over the years and they strengthened it. So now we're giving them a lot of publicity. Dave, that's one of you guys to shout out to. And then maybe we can connect them with one of your campuses. So that might be an option.
Thanks, Cynthia. All right, great. Well, that concludes our panel session for this morning. Thank you so much for attending.